नमस्ते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
This evening we're going to read a verse from the Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter 6, entitled Dhyana Yoga. Dhyana means meditation. Text number 17. Yuktahara viharasya yukta chestasya karmasu yukta svapnava bodhasya yoga bhavati dukkha. Yukta means regulated. Ahara, eating. Viharasya, recreation. Yukta, regulated. Cheshtasya, of one who works for maintenance. Karmasu, in discharging duties. Yukta, regulated. Svapna avabodhasya, sleep and wakefulness. Yogaha, practice of yoga. Bhavati, becomes. Dukha ha, diminishing pains. Translation: he who is regulated in his habits of eating, sleeping, recreation, and work can mitigate all material pains by practicing the yoga system. Everyone can please repeat. He who is regulated in his habits of eating, sleeping, recreation, and work can mitigate all material pains by practicing the yoga system. Mitigate doesn't mean it's not a gate, but mitigate means to diminish or ultimately to do away with or finish. Mitigate all material pains. The purport by Srila Prabhupada is: extravagance in the matter of eating, sleeping, defending, and mating, which are demands of the body, can block advancement in the practice of yoga. So there are four kinds of activities that all living beings engage in: ahar, nidra, bhai, and maitun. Eating, sleeping, sex, and fearing or defending. So there are 8,400,000 species of life, and in one mode or another, every living being in every one of the 8 million species is engaged in these different activities. There are obviously various numerous subcategories, but the four general categories of all activities are eating, sleeping, mating, and defending, or activities to support these four things. So in human life also, we're part animal, or at least we have our animal nature. We also have to eat, sleep, mate, and defend. And this is the Dhyana Yoga chapter. Now, generally, when you think of Dhyana Yoga, sometimes it is also called Ashtanga Yoga. Ashta meaning eight, and Anga meaning parts. The eightfold system of yoga, the eightfold yoga of mysticism, when you see, you know, a picture of a yogi with sitting in lotus position and, you know, arms straight and hands in a mudra, and he's obviously practicing some meditation or yoga. That's generally what we think of as dhyana yoga. And we think of that type of yoga meaning austerity. We get a picture of some yogi in a cave in the Himalayas, completely away from society, eating practically nothing, and practicing very rigid austerities. There is a picture in the Bhagavad Gita, actually, here of a yogi practicing meditation. This particular... Oh, it may be in here yet. Let's see. Oh, yeah, here he is. I don't know if you can see him, but, you know. Can you see that? You know? Yeah? Okay. There's a dhyana yogi. You know, you can practically... He's got just skin and bones. His hair is completely knotted and matted. He hasn't combed it in, you know, hundreds of years. And what's happening is his soul is leaving the Brahmarandra chakra, the top of his head. He's leaving the body and leaving the body behind. So that's generally what we think of when we think of Ashtanga Yoga, that kind of austere mysticism. But here, Lord Krishna is describing that the essence of all kinds of yoga is not fanatic abstinence one way or the other. He's talking about balance, that eating, sleeping, mating, and defending are demands of the body. And Prabhupada is saying that extravagance, meaning extreme in one direction or the other, this blocks your natural development in spiritual life. And in the verse itself, it's also stated, yukta ahara. Yukta means regulation. Yukta also means connection with God. The Sanskrit, the English word yoke comes from yukta. Or the Sanskrit word yoga also comes from yukta. So, spiritual advancement can be blocked. But as far as eating is concerned, it can be regulated only when one is practiced to take and accept prasadam, or sanctified food. In other words, obviously yogis, these type of yogis that I showed you, they reduce their eating because they recognize that they can't sit like this and, you know, take a meal of rice and dal and chapatis. They have to stop and, you know, eat. They can't meditate. They also try to reduce or stop all sleeping. And there's no question of mating or defending. That's totally stopped. Otherwise, they can't achieve perfection. But in the practice of bhakti yoga, and it's interesting to note, this sixth chapter is Krishna is explaining to Arjuna. He's already explained karma yoga. He's already explained raja yoga. He's explaining about Ashtanga yoga, different kinds of yoga system. At the end of the sixth chapter, after explaining everything, please note the difference here. Throughout the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains things so that we can understand what the standard is. But he personally recommends. So if I explain things to you, a number of different things, but I say, my personal recommendation is this, then you know that I've explained other things to you, but that's simply for your own knowledge. Just explaining it doesn't mean that I recommend it. So Krishna, at the end of this chapter, he says, Yoginam api sarvesham, of all yogis, madgate nantaratmana shraddhavan bhajate yomam same yukta tamo mataha. He who worships me with faith and devotion, he is the highest of all yogis. Yukta tama. He's the highest. He's highest yukta, same word, yukta tama, or uttama. He's the highest of all yogis. When you think about it, the most powerful influence on our lives is our basic feelings. We're affected most in our lives. We meditate on things, on people that we have some attraction for. For example, a mother's love for her child. It's not something that you have to teach. It's spontaneous. It's natural. Or a husband's love for his wife, or a friend's love for his friend. This powerful emotion, love, you don't have to twist your legs this way and push your nose that way, and your meditation, your fixation is already there. So what Krishna is saying is that the most powerful meditation on God is the meditation of love or devotion. And therefore the whole Bhagavad Gita is meant to bring out our natural loving affection for God. Whatever we have in our lives, we were born into a particular family, and you know, everybody has different experiences in family life, but more or less we have some attachment for our brothers and our sisters and our mother and our father, one degree or another. More so than non-family members. Blood is thicker than water. What does that mean? Obviously blood is thicker than water, but what it means is your relationships with your family members are deeper than your relationships with non-family members in general. So, our relationships in this world are strong, but they're all temporary. Even the relationships with our family members. And Krishna is trying to explain this to Arjuna. Arjuna he's a very moral person. He's a good man. From every type of calculation, he's a strong person. He's a good leader. He's ethical. He's sensitive. He has so many wonderful qualities. He's a very good person. But he doesn't want to fight in the battle because he has to fight against people that he loves, people that he admires, people that he worships. And Krishna, right in the very beginning, after Arjuna accepts Krishna as his guru, Krishna's first business is to chastise Arjuna. He says, kutastva kashmalamidam. Kuta, kutas. Where from this petty weakness of heart has come, Arjuna? Kutastva kashmalamidam vishame samupastitam. Anarya, it is not expected of someone of your learning, your stature, your family background, it's not expected that you should be so weak to be so attached to a relationship in this world which is going to be finished sooner or later anyway. Today, tomorrow, next year, 20 years from now. The reason you're suffering, Arjuna, is because of your whole vision of life. The whole way that you look at life is the problem in your life. Your whole approach is wrong. The emotions that you have are not wrong. Your basic desires are not wrong. But the way you're approaching life is wrong. And he goes on to explain that we are not these bodies, which of course is, he says, Najayate mriyate va kadachin nayam bhutva bhavitavana bhuyaha ajo nitya shasvato yam purano nahanyate mahanyamane shariri. The soul is aja, unborn. So something that doesn't have a birth, doesn't have a beginning, it doesn't have an end either. He says, Nasate vidite bhavo nabhavo vidite sataha. Truth or substantiality, things that really matter, things that are important, that will bring you the happiness you're looking for, that will bring you long-term peace of mind, things related to God, things related to the spiritual truth. These things do not have a beginning or an end. They're eternal activities, eternal emotions, eternal relationships. Krishna tries to get Arjuna to change his way of looking at life and to learn to repose, to learn to give all of his spiritual energy, which has been misplaced in matter, to turn that towards God, towards the spiritual world, to see others. He goes on to explain the qualities of an enlightened soul. He says that someone who vidya vinaya sampane brahmane gavi hastini suni chaiva svapake cha pandita samadarshina. A pundit, a learned person, sees with equal vision an elephant, a dog, a brahmana, one of the, you know, the highest orders of human life, a scholar, a very saintly type of person. He sees a brahmana the same as he sees a dog or an elephant or a low-class man, a dog eater. That's his vision. It's based on his seeing the soul, not seeing the body. And Krishna tells Arjuna, your problem is that you're seeing the body and making all your value judgments, making all your decisions and all your relations dependent on the body. So Krishna tries to give Arjuna a formula by which he can cure this skin disease that Arjuna has. Arjuna has a skin disease, attachment to the skin. We all have this skin disease. It goes deep because we hear Bhagavad Gita, we hear spiritual teachings from the Bible, from the Quran, from saintly persons, and we agree with it, but we can't change our activities. We can't give up our sinful habits very easily. We struggle with it. So why is, if it's the truth, why is it not easy to follow? The truth, theoretically, should be easy to follow. The problem is our skin disease. We're attached. We're very strongly attached to a certain kind of enjoyment which we've become accustomed to. And in fact, if we were to stop long enough, if we were truly serious about our lives, and we would just, you know, like pull back the reins and, you know, whoa, you know, slow down, stop. If we were to stop a little bit and look at what is actually happening to us, what we're going through for achieving what we call happiness or sense gratification, what price are we paying? Are we actually becoming satisfied and happy by all of these austerities which we are performing? How many people like to live in the rat race? How many people actually like to live in overcrowded cities? How many have actually gone to the country and spent a few months living on a farm or living in nature? How many people have actually tried to live simply and not gotten caught up in anxiety and frenzy to struggle for existence? How many have actually sought to see that there is a complete arrangement for every one of us? And there is no need to struggle. It is an illusion to think that we have to live in the way that we live in order to exist. If you travel around the world and you see different civilizations or different societies, different countries, different standards of living, and what you find is that, sure, some people are poor because they don't have television sets. Some people are poor because they don't have cars. Some people are poor because, you know, they can't travel around the world and see how others are suffering. But people adjust. People really adjust to their environment, and they become satisfied and happy according to whatever environment they're put into. It doesn't matter where you go. I've been in the villages in India. I've been in the small towns in China and Malaysia. I've been in the biggest cities in the world, all over the world. And I've seen a definite pattern that people adjust. So it's really very relative. You don't need a certain particular... This standard that we've surrendered to has been dictated to us by people who want to exploit us for their own aggrandizement. They've convinced us that unless we have all these material things, that we can't be happy. But real satisfaction and happiness is not a question of having more material goods. It's a question of realizing our eternal spiritual identity. And Krishna's trying to help Arjuna come to that platform. So he's giving him a way of doing it. When you have material desires, they're almost endless. There's a nice verse in the end of the second chapter. Apuryamanamachala pratishtam samudram apa pravishanti yadvat. Samudra means ocean. The samudra. Apuryamanam achala pratishtam samudramapa prapashanti yadvat. Just like so many rivers are coming down the mountains and entering into the ocean. So many rivers, so many glaciers are melting and whatnot into the ocean. But the ocean is always calm. So many rivers are entering in. At every moment, millions of tons of water are coming from the rivers and entering into the ocean. But the ocean is always relatively calm. And similarly, tadbat kamayam pravishanti, pravishanti sarve, sashantim apnotina kama kami. Shanti means peace, peace of mind, satisfaction. You can attain peace of mind and satisfaction not by running after every different whimsical desire that you have. There are so many things. You get this and you want that. There's no end to it. Not by struggling to satisfy the whimsical desires, but rather by trying to control your desires, by regulating your desires, by moderation. And here Prabhupada is talking about eating and prasadam. So it's not a question of stopping eating as that yogi. Obviously, he hasn't eaten in months. In fact, some yogis even stop eating altogether and they live just on air. But that's not Krishna's formula here in the Bhagavad Gita. He says you don't stop eating, but you eat only sanctified food. And that will achieve the same benefit as the yogi, the dhyana yogi. You'll get the same result by regulation, by eating right foods at the proper time of day in a very controlled way, by eating spiritually sanctified foods. And he goes on, Prabhupada says, Lord Krishna is offered, according to the Bhagavad Gita, vegetables, flowers, fruits, grains, milk, etc. In this way, a person in Krishna consciousness becomes automatically trained not to accept food meant for, not meant for human consumption, or not in the category of goodness. So, there are three modes, goodness, passion, and ignorance, and everything is in one of these three categories. There are foods in the mode of goodness, passion, and ignorance. There is work in the mode of goodness, passion, and ignorance. There is renunciation and charity in the mode of goodness, passion, and ignorance. But in order to be able to see the truth, you have to prepare yourself. You have to develop very fine-tuned senses to see beyond the veil of Maya, to see beyond the curtain of illusion, to understand your spiritual identity, your spiritual ism, to get free of your skin disease, to get cured. You have to come to the mode of goodness. And one of the most important things is eating. George Bernard Shaw, was that him? Said, you are what you eat. So, but sometimes I thought, well, we eat vegetables, so are we vegetables? But that's not what that means. In that case, it's better to eat animals, because at least you're higher than vegetables. What he's trying to say is that what you eat affects your physiology. If you eat food, which is the product of violence, or as we would say is in the mode of passion or ignorance, then your body will be affected like that. Your consciousness will be affected and your body will be affected. You'll be agitated both physically and mentally and even spiritually you'll be covered. So we eat Krishna prasadam, which is tasty. We don't make Krishna prasadam in a dull way. We try to make very nice tasting food. But dharma virudha, we make it according to religious principles. And of course, that means offering it to Krishna. Krishna says, my devotees, bunjate te tvagam papa ye pachanti atmakarna. Someone who eats vegetarian food, if it's not offered to him, it's sinful activity. Because just being a vegetarian is not enough. Monkeys are vegetarians, so what? Birds are vegetarian. That doesn't make them great saintly persons. Being a vegetarian is a very minor concession. It's better than being a non-vegetarian. At least you're not creating heavy karma. But the perfection is to eat foods which you can offer to God, which you don't have to stop your meditation. You can be eating Krishna prasadam and thinking of Krishna and practicing yoga even while you're eating. Isn't that wonderful? In fact, Prabhupada said that in bhakti yoga, you can eat 24 hours a day and be in samadhi. And I've seen some devotees try to do that. You can eat something. Prabhupada said specifically, he said you can eat something and then say Hare Krishna and then take some more and say Hare Krishna. And that way you can just go on practicing bhakti yoga. As long as someone will go on supplying you. But the key is to offer to Krishna. Lord Krishna is offered he's offered fruits, grains, milk, etc. In this way, a person in Krishna consciousness becomes automatically trained not to accept food not meant for human consumption. The mode of goodness. As far as sleeping is concerned, a Krishna conscious person is always alert in the discharge of his duties in Krishna consciousness. And therefore, any unnecessary time spent sleeping is considered a great loss. Avyartha kalatvam. The Krishna consciousness is one of the 26 qualities of a pure devotee. Avyartha kalatvam means not to waste even a moment. Well, there's different ways to look at this. One is that if you get something which is so sweet, so enjoyable, so satisfying, then the tendency is to take more and more of it, whether it be music or food or any kind of enjoyment. You naturally want to have more of something that's very good. So a devotee develops attraction for serving Krishna to the extent that he doesn't want to be engaged in anything but service to Krishna, because it's very, very satisfying to him. He's riding on a wave. He's on top of the surf. He's in ecstasy. And why should he come down from that platform to do anything else? Now that's, of course, most of us, maybe some of you do, but I know most of us don't have that strong a taste in the beginning for devotional service. But there is some taste there. And as far as I've experienced, even that little taste for chanting is far sweeter than any other experience of sense gratification. Even though it's just a drop of the ocean, it's a drop of the nectar of devotion. It's a tiny drop, but that taste is enough to pull you on And to know that if I could just get a whole mouthful, you know, if I could just dive into that ocean, how much sweeter that would be. And so therefore a devotee goes on deeper and deeper, trying to improve his sadhana, trying to increase his association with other inspired devotees, trying to understand the Shastra, trying to become more humble, trying to become more detached, trying to develop all the qualities of a devotee. He goes on because of that taste. And in fact, it said, and I've seen it too, it said, Tyakva svadharmam charanam bujamarer bhajana pakvota patetato yadi yatra kvava vadrama buddhamushikim kovarta apo bhajatam svadharmataha. That a devotee of the Lord, he feels that by Krishna consciousness he has gained so much. And even if, by chance, he loses everything materially, he's not disturbed. He feels he's gotten something more valuable, just by a little Krishna consciousness. And in fact, sometimes, due to a mistake, spiritual life can be like shaving with a sharp razor. You slip. And especially if you're using Indian razor blades, you cut your face. 7 o'clock, that's probably one of the better ones, but you can't compare to like Gillette or something. They don't cost the same. They cost 1/10 the price. But it's very true that if you make a little mistake, you'll cut yourself and there'll be blood. So in spiritual life also, you have to pay attention. You have to practice all the rules and regulations, and you have to give it your full attention. Of course, you never lose. Even if you make a mistake, you can always pick up and begin again. There's no problem. But sometimes devotees fall down. And their karma takes up exactly where it left off. When they took to devotional service, they actually came out from the modes of nature. They were under a special protective shield, protected by Krishna. Krishna says, Madasrita. What is that? My devotees are under my Daivim Prakritim Ashrita. What is that verse? Anyway, Daivim Prakritim Ashrita. They're under my divine shelter, my divine protection. Mahatmanas tu mam partha Daivim Prakritim Ashrita. Bhajanti Ananya Manaso. My devotees are not under the normal laws of karma. So if they leave the shelter of devotional service, then exactly where the laws of karma left off, they take over again and they start to influence their lives. And, you know, I've seen devotees go back to, they were doing some nice devotional service in Krishna consciousness, and then they decided they wanted to go out and try to be happy in the material world again, and they went back out there and what did they do? They became a gas station attendant. Not that there's anything wrong with gas station attendants, but, you know, in devotional service, they were doing something like preaching to big millionaires in India or doing some very exalted service, and people were offering them some respect and this and that. And then all of a sudden, they're washing windshields and guys are yelling at them not to spill gas on their car and, you know. Or they're selling, you know, in some cases they're out there selling pharmaceuticals, or, you know, wherever their karma left them, they get right back into it again. And they try. They try to enjoy again the same way they were, but they can't. Because that little taste that they developed in the devotional service, it keeps agitating them. And they want to taste that again and again. So the taste of Krishna consciousness is so strong that a devotee doesn't, 20 years ago, it's the same activity. And that's insanity. He's trying to get a better result out of life by doing the same things. That's insanity, to expect you'll get a different result by doing the same things the way you've always done them. You're only going to go on getting the same results as you've always gotten. So here Krishna is giving us a process how we can rise above the miseries of our daily existence. Now he's talking, he's leading towards spiritual life, but he's giving some basic principles which can help us even in the very beginning, can help us even before we attain perfection in higher spiritual knowledge. He's saying, Arjuna, you just regulate your activities in spiritual life. Not extreme, Prabhupada says extravagance. So not extreme in either way, but according to, I guess the very best description, and I'll end on this note because it's very graphic. He says that dharma virudha bhuteshu kamosmi bhartashava. I guess the greatest symbol of material pleasure is sex. And Ken was telling me, and someone else today I was talking to, and they were also telling me the same thing, that whenever they tell people about giving up sense gratification, Ken sometimes talks to philosophically to his friends, and this other devotee that was talking to me, of course he's a devotee, and he talks to his fellow workers sometimes about his lifestyle, and people can't understand it. They say, how can you live like that? They can't understand how you could live without intoxication or meat eating or gambling or illicit sex. So Krishna is telling Arjuna on this subject of sex, which is considered the highest kind of material gratification by many people, he's saying that you don't have to stop the activity, but you have to purify the activity. So regulation of all these things, eating, sleeping, and mating, and defending dharma virudha bhuteshu kamosmi. Krishna says kama asmi, or osmi when combined together, kamosmi. I am sex. In other words, one can serve God by raising a family of Krishna conscious children. That's a devotional practice. You could not do that as a dhyana yogi. It would be tough. You'd have to have a yogini, you know, and she's there and you're there. And it wouldn't work out. Up in the Himalayas. You know, after thousands of years. Anyway, it just wouldn't work out. In fact, Shankaracharya, who is the most widely accepted exponent of monism, and usually that's what the Astanga yogis strive for, is to merge with Brahman. So Shankaracharya, he did not even meet with householders. First of all, you had to take sannyas, then you could approach him or his ashram for perfection. But higher than this monism, or higher than yoga, this astanga or impersonal yoga, is the merging with God in oneness of desire. Thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven kind of thing. Making God's desire your desire. Merging with God in spirit, in love and devotion. That is actually the highest kind of transcendental merging. And that can be achieved by one who is in the mode of goodness and who is regulated in his activities of eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. So here in the ashram, we are living a regulated life, and we're teaching others how to practice in their homes. Even in the city, it seems like a difficult job, and it is, but it's necessary for sanity to become a master of your senses rather than a servant. The only way you can become a master of your senses, to become in charge of your life, is if you practice regulation. Rising early, engaging in meditation, not sleeping too much, eating spiritual foodstuffs offered to Krishna, working and using the fruits of your work for God's pleasure, God's work, or God's mission, whatever. All of these things can mitigate the miseries of old age, disease, and death, and rebirth. You can rise above. You can be like the lotus flower that's in the water, but not touched by the water because it's protected by a film of oil. And you're protected by a film of devotional love for Krishna. You're protected by understanding that you're not the body, you're not the soul. So you can mitigate all your material miseries by this process. And if you can't regulate your life, then your advancement in spiritual life will be very slow. So, I'll finish there. Is there any discussion on this? I'm sure everybody agrees, right? Are there any questions? Practical questions or philosophical questions or any stories you want to relate? Any realizations? Sometimes it's fun, you know, when we have these bhakti vriksha cell group meetings. It's not happening so much in America, in some parts of America, but all over Europe and Asia and India, devotees are having these Namahata meetings. And it's not like some person gives a lecture and everybody sits in the audience and tries to stay awake or something, but it's where people get together and they read a verse from the Gita and then they pass the mic around and everybody tells, well, in my life, this means, and they express themselves. And then the next person says, well, that's interesting. In my life, this verse means this to me. And they say it's very effective. People enjoy that a lot. So,
Well, I have a question. You mentioned that you said that Gita classes are popular. People share their insights, right? Now, playing on principles is no gambling. So when I was in 10 years old, active disciple,
When you were which?
Active disciple.
Okay.
My understanding was that you did not interpret the scriptures with all points of the Bhagavad-gita. Whereas I am the person who pits around the scripture and get everyone's insight into it. Isn't that kind of like going off?
No, there's a person who can, clarify certain things, obviously. It's a group discussion, though. Yeah, you don't want to speculate too much on the meaning of the scripture, but you might interpret it how it applies in your own life. I mean, you do read Prabhupada's purports, obviously. It's not just you read the verse. But believe me, people see the Bhagavad Gita in different ways, and it means different things to different people. And Krishna is so wonderful that he does reveal himself to different people in different ways. And it's not, there's not only one way to have a relationship with Krishna. There are 5.5 billion ways you can have a relationship with Krishna, because each and every one of us is unique and different. And Krishna will reveal himself to you according to how you want to reciprocate with him. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavad Gita Ki Jai.